We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bojovics. Joining me today is Francis Hunt, the market sniper himself. Thanks for joining me today, Francis.
Hey, Tom. Very glad to be here.
So you have some great news for, let's say, long-suffering precious metals investors. So why don't you start by explaining to us why some great news for us is around the corner?
Yes, it's a very, very tricky thing, and it's been a hard haul for precious metals folks. It's almost like you need an incredible amount of patience. And I call the sort of the silver trade and to a degree the gold trade is very much the trade where you're going to be wrong, and suddenly very, very damn right. Because there's a feeling and a sentiment towards the monetized specialist high profile metals such as gold and silver, that they're a bit the canaries in the gold mine for the overall global economy. And some folks don't want them tweeting too loud too soon. But certain events are starting to catch up, which will make the inevitable force their hands. And I think we'll see the two primal gold and silver being unleashed, as we've already seen the likes of palladium, rhodium, and one or two other things that I'll ghost past on charts. But in some senses, I almost want to take a whole step back and say, here's what's happened elsewhere that actually has huge knock-on effects for gold and silver investors and why it's important. And it's kind of a tough topic, Tom, because a lot of people's eyes glaze over if you talk about the debt markets, because everybody understands equities. Okay, we understand Apple, we buy a device, they make money, it's a business. Most of us have that conceptual grab. Debt markets tend to put people to sleep. Not when I'm talking about them. So don't worry, guys, you're going to get the gist of this just fine. But also, if you can think macro about the big, big cycles, you're going to understand that we're at one of those pivotal turning events. So whilst for those of you that will have the benefit of a visual, I'll just show a chart. I'm going to certainly speak in a manner that all those listening on the radio are going to get the gist of this. There's been essentially, since Paul Volcker was head of the Federal Reserve, he was the last semi-serious, in our view, Fed chairperson. He tamed the inflation of the 70s and the 80s. They were very scarring in my mind. I remember when I was in school, we had to do certain things because of inflation and all of this about the oil price, this and that, and it was all breaking out. This was, of course, as a result, economic history-wise, of the Nixon era, Vietnam War, the carpet bombing, the gold window, and all the foreign nations such as France requesting their gold back, leading to him eventually closing the gold window, which I'm sure many of your very smart viewers will be quite aware of, that rolled into the 70s, into early 80s inflationary market, where they eventually closed the window for gold, and it all became about, this is a fiat system, 100% final fiat system. So for those that can see, that was the rates. This is a yield curve. So yields climbed very high. Faulkner pushed the yields very high, right up into 1981. For those that are viewing, that blue line represents the peak yields. For those just listening, September 81 was the peak yield environment. So the interest rates were the highest. If you were buying a home, you would have been paying quite a high amount, verging on usury, I would say, for your mortgage payment. Since then, we've gone down, down, down. The yields have gone down. That means a bond bull market. So all you really need to understand on bonds is that they go up when the rates go down. There's an inverse relationship. It's kind of like the gold-silver ratio, many of you will know. We want the gold-silver ratio to go down because that means both silver and gold are going up. In the same way, there's that inverse relationship with yields and bond values. What are bonds? Basically, it's debt. What is our monetary system? It's a debt-based system. Every time you create money, you're creating a debt. Think of it as sort of T-ledger accounting in a simplest sense. One person's liability is another person's asset. We create the money, it gets loaned out. It's a loan. And what we've had We don't have a Bitcoin bubble or a gold bubble or a silver bubble. We actually have a mega debt bubble. And many people are starting to understand this. And the biggest shoe to drop for gold and silver investors will be when people no longer buy the narrative of debt as an asset class. In other words, it's too oversupplied. There's too much of it. It isn't worth holding. I don't want to own it. And that then sees a massive move away from debt. Now, you might say, well, as a person, I've never bought a bond. Generally, it's not individual people that buy bonds or debt instruments like T-notes, etc. Some of you might put money in the money markets occasionally. That's normally quite short term. Typically, your pensions, if you've not got a 401k, which you're managing yourself, guys in the UK have a self-invested personal pension, they have those. But most people actually have some form of an assurance company that is actually managing their funds for them. And they are coerced into buying debt. The theory goes they need to hold these big lumps of cash because the government pays an interest yield. They are paying out the pensioners. They get this income stream that they can then distribute consistently. In other words, there's a reliable payer at the end of this story, and he's going to keep paying his interest streams, and you can pay the pensions for all those people that have contributed to that scheme during the period. So pension funds are very, very deep in this. It's not the only thing. You know, you'll find certain hedge funds, you'll find other investment vehicles that are engaged in there, but it's a typical one that most people will understand. And actually owning debt since 81 has seen it appreciate in value as rates went down. Now, who was the biggest orchestrator of that? Well, after Falkner tamed the problems in the markets, we started to get a bit of a bull market in equities. And who came in 1987? Alan Greenspan. Now, if we want to finger one guy for doing the most damage to the debt environment and setting us on a course that isn't easily reversible. In other words, everyone who followed him could only add to the debt. It would have to be this guy, Mr. Liquidity. He spoke a game of irrational exuberance in 96, but he let that stock market run right into 99. So if it was irrationally exuberant in 96, why was it still running like a madman going into 2000 for the dot-com boom? Because he never reined it back enough. So we got our equity dot-com boom that then broke, and we had our first recession. So for those watching these the charts, and I encourage anyone listening, maybe just run by your amazing YouTube channel. I love how you've laid it out. They should definitely sub and remember to hit the bell there. But there you had 91 was a bit of a crisis. Then you have the 97, 98. That was the Asian crisis that came. You can see these selling points. Then you had a big sell-off here, which was kind of coinciding with a dot-com just under that one, which was just post 2000. Then, of course, 2007, we started to fall down. Each time we're ratcheting down the rates, you can see the staircasing down. So drift, drift, sideways, drop. Drift, drift, side drop. And each of those drops coinciding with a key economic event of great pain and suffrage. Then we got into the QE period here. That was in 2011 and 12, where we got QE 1, 2, 3, twist. This was just print, print, print. And amazingly, they were proliferating all this money, and they were also supporting the debt, often being one of the largest buyers themselves. That makes it a fake market. It's a bit like I create some piece of art and I ask 10 million for every piece, but to create the market and give the impression that my art is worth 10 million a piece, I'm the biggest buyer of 95% of the pieces. And then I managed to fool a few people into thinking, well, if someone's buying it for this, it must be worth it. And I get to move a few for a crazy number. That's how I view almost the Fed's participation. Many people think, well, China's the biggest holder of your debt. No, China's not. The Fed is the biggest holder of debt. So we have each of these events. You have 15. And then right up here, supposedly to tighten rates, for which I said they will never be able to continue that for any plausible period, because throughout that period, they were adding to the size of debt, which just increases the sensitivity to interest rates. So it's kind of like I give you, in this layman's term, a credit card with a million credit card limit. even though you might be a blue collar guy, maybe you only earn $30,000 a year salary. And as you just keep buying and living above your means, you live like a millionaire, you buy a $400,000, $500,000 house, you buy cars on credit, and you're all paying off, and you're just building this balance on this credit limit I've given you. You blow a million, I extend it to 2, 3, and 4. Eventually, if the interest rates start going up, it only takes a small amount, if you can manage the payment, it only takes a small change once you've increased the scale of the debt for the whole system to stop working. I call it the hands in the cookie jar. You might fit the hand through the neck, but if you try and grab all the sweets in one go, you can't come back out. And that's what's been happening in terms of the debt proliferation cycle. This is end of game for debt, because you can't ever get the hand out of the cookie jar and go back to anything that resembled normal rates for savings. And this is going to tie in with gold and silver. Stay with me, because what we're actually talking about is the end of the debt cycle is very, very close at hand, in my opinion. I say very close, I'm not referring tomorrow, next week, but I'm saying in terms of the years, this is a very critical shoe to have dropped for the at-the-till inflation that most people understand by inflation.
Before we continue here, this really kind of shows us this progression of interest rates keep going down and down and down, really shows us that there's not really any more room to be able to keep going down, correct?
Well, absolutely. In other words, some people will bring up the topic of almost negative interest rates. Mm-hmm. You're barely in there getting a positive yield. And what's actually happened is with inflation, you're getting a guaranteed negative real rate of return. Mm-hmm. So that means even if you trust the government CPI, which I'll go on to say I don't believe you should, but let's just start from that as your departure point. If you're having 2% as your personal CPI, and that's what you believe, but you've got a yield below that, in actual fact, you're locking in a compounding loss every year. So the amount you get in, so this is just a non-worthwhile investment, and pensioners should funds should no longer be investing in this. They shouldn't have been investing it long before, but now you're staring at the wall. Now you can't say, is it a wall, maybe I'll keep driving full ball. Eventually your car is a few meters away from the wall, and it's time to say, you know what, I'm going about to have an accident here. And this is how I consider these guys conduct generally, by supporting the debt markets for as long as they have. Of course, there's government pressure, there's Fed pressure on financial institutions. You almost have to sometimes view them as one and the same. You get people moving out of government into hedge funds, et cetera, et cetera. It represents a bit the FDA and the pharma industry almost, in terms of turnstiles and people rotating around the financial services and the government, the SEC, and various other institutions. So it's difficult not to see that there's been, at the very kindest, this benign neglect, if not intent, and that this end of cycle is coming. And what happened in COVID that's really important, to build on your point that you raised, if I just flip this chart for those that will have visual to a logarithmic scale, all they'll note is the relative change in rates has gone absolutely crazy. Because when you're at 0.25%, on a rate, and then suddenly it spikes up to 1.25% in quite short succession, you've gone up five times. Mm-hmm. So the percentage increase is far higher than when you drop from, you go from 2.5 to 5%, which is two times. So as you get lower down, the sensitivity is much, much higher. And that's mm-hmm. when you get this huge dump and then spike reaction, which essentially March of last year, coinciding with the pandemic, and the snapback rally. Now, for those that don't know charting and technical analysis, usually at the end of trends, so here's a typical lesson. Usually at the end of trends, you get a final blow off. Think of the dot-com bloom, that when you got a real, like, there were weeks when it was just going up 10, 15% individual equities a week, sometimes in a day. And you get that massive blow off, and then you have a huge crash. Bull markets die in blow-offs, aggressive upward movements. That's the weird thing that catches everybody by surprise. because they die by going up too fast, not by going down. That's too late already. That's your bear market, the beginning. You need to be a step before. So the same thing with yields and collapsing markets. You have a final capitulation before. So every last person who was a holder just says, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. It's just bad news. I've held forever. And you get that capitulation. And in some ways,
this kind of goes towards your point of, you know, normally you say the bond market should be as boring as watching two snails play football, right? And we've seen this dramatic, you know, V-shape chart pattern. And this kind of goes to that point, right?
Absolutely. It's huge volatility, which is excitement, really. It's thrashing around.
And this is kind of like your holding a beach ball underwater analogy, right?
Correct.
This provides energy for that reversal.
And the harder you've pushed it down and the further you've pushed it down, the more it snaps back. And this is the final volatility that tends to bookmark a trend. If you go back here, you'll see in 1981 how you had this huge ramp in rates to really kill inflation. And that was quite volatile. I go back to the normal scale in 1981, and everyone was talking about it. Inflation was the news. I'm probably giving my age away because I almost remember it. And my, you know, my parents around the dinner table talking about this, didn't really understand too much. I was young enough. But I picked up on that history. And so you get that huge bookmarks of volatility near the end. And a corollary of that, which was very, very interesting in the precious metals market, is that silver put in a huge capitulation low on the COVID. So you often see other markets that are intertwined do much the same. This pandemic event of March 2020 was a bookmarking event. It was a bookmarking event for debt. It was the final flurry, and it was a bookmarking event for the final capitulation in silver. I believe silver fell to 11. We'll run past the silver chart in a bit, but there'll be guys of you mumbling and shouting at the radio, yep, it was 11. It did trade low at one point, but it recovered a great deal, and then COVID occurred, and then we had that huge sell-off. That literally was the last gasp for getting the discount window for precious metals. And since then, we had a gold run. So by the way, on gold, it's quite important this. We'd forecast the top at just through 2,000 on the dollar, mainly because we had this, what we refer, and we are specialists in technical analysis, the Hunt Volatility Funnel setups, which was gold on the euro and gold on the pound. And we'd got two targets of that. We declared that on on our YouTube channel, at the Market Sniper, and those targets were both met. Now, interestingly, it hadn't set on dollar because dollar had a bit of a unique footprint of its own. It had been kind of strong when the rest were weak and a little bit of the kind of weak when the others were strong. So we had perfect structure on two other major currencies. So we closed our dollar gold longs when the euro and the pound made it. So we're funnily enough trading the aggressively with leverage. So I'm a long-term investor, and it's quite an important point to make for your listeners. Mm-hmm. I have a blue pot, which is passive and is unleveraged. That is a permanent stacking of silver and gold. And many of you simply will understand that and are doing much the same.
That's physical silver and gold, Francis?
Correct. Yes, indeed, correct. Thank you for pulling me up on making sure I'm dead clear on that. Physical silver and gold.
That's like your savings account.
Exactly. And I actually sat with that 7 or 8 years underwater. I'm like patience of a monk on that. I kept buying it. But during that period, we had that same HVF setups that I was referring to. And I actually did trade against, some of you guys might go boo, against that and turn that profit again into a blue pot. So I have what I call the orange pot, where you have a little bit of leverage, and a hot pot, a third pot, when you're really confident and you've got to be careful with that. And you go a little bit higher leverage. So we judiciously use that. When we make profits in either the red or the orange, we tax it down into the blue pot, because the best dough is the slow dough, not the fast dough. If it comes too fast, you lose it too fast. So you tax it down. This is part of the methodology that we train for wealth building in reset times, which is what our community is about. So just a little bit of recent history. So we were actually long gold, and we expected a progress decay period, which is when it was going to exhaust for a while. And we sold very close to that top. So in that point, we executed well. I don't want to give the impression we always do it. I hate braggarts. We get stuff wrong like anybody else. But we've been expecting a period of pullback for gold, and we've had quite an extended pullback. People forget that we were 1,050 at lows a couple of years ago, and since then we've graduated, we went up to a 2,000. So if we're at 1,700, we give back. It's a much bigger marketplace. You can't compare it to a crypto market where you have a token worth, you know, 100 billion or 50 billion. This is a 10 trillion, maybe 15 trillion, somewhere in between market cap. And don't forget, the bullion vault bankers hold most of it as well. And they can keep that price suppressed because they know they have ownership. And it can all be re-rated, much like the post-Roosevelt years when bullion was banned. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. But just going back to here, so that the key volatility was your final discount window on silver, and you got a crash, a sell-off on gold, and the opposite, a final blow-off on debt. Now, more and more people are saying, hold on a minute, I'm getting negative real interest rates on this debt instrument. But if I dig a hole in my back garden and drop a bar of gold, it's not charging me interest. And the same amount of gold will be there when I dig it up in 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. While actually on your bond, you're compounding a negative real yield because your currency is devaluing. You're being charged a lower interest rate than the inflation rate. So you're compounding a negative number. Why am I in this and not in that? It makes gold more attractive. Negative interest rates make gold more attractive. As I transition to the other chart, and I'm going to just show this one again, I'll talk through it for the guys that are just listening in an audio sense. But this is what's known as a head and shoulders pattern. It's on TLT, which is the 20-year. It's an ETF on the 20-year debt market. Now, instead of being the yield, which is dropping, this is the actual value of the bond, which has been doing the exact opposite. It's been going up throughout the 40 years since 1981. And this is the key point that you'll see. This is why I say this violence of volatility that I've highlighted here in March, I've also put it in a box, is the end of the move. It's such schizophrenia. You get a snapback rally, you roll over. We call this an inverted HVF. It's the first in a new trend, and it means you can overperform for an extended period. And we've got a head and shoulder as well in here, which is a classic reversal trade, which most technical analysts, and it's not a small time frame one, it's a daily chart. So there's your left shoulder, kind of I put a tabled mountain type head, and then we're expecting a rally. We've got a target down here to finish, and this is the loss of value. So rates up, and this is now we're looking at it from a value perspective. Now, if this head and shoulder triggers, which it's already now met the neckline and run at 135, it'll run down to 89. Don't forget, at its high point at COVID, it was 179. So you were talking about two snails playing football. How's that for a little bit of too much action? Those snails suddenly took cocaine and acid and found themselves a motorbike, because now there's a whole bunch of buzzing around and the ball is flying into the back of the net at 10 times the rate it's ever done in this football match. And that's the, you know, that's the equivalent of tapping out at 179 in March last year and possibly heading down. Now, this is a big call. You'll get a lot of people that will say, no, it won't happen. No, they might poo-poo this. But I can tell you, I don't argue with the charts. We're involved in calling oil short prior to the COVID to a single dollar. And I did that from the stage in Acapulco. And by the way, we hadn't traded single dollar oil in 30 years. And that is using the Hunt Volatility Funnel method. So people who don't understand charting, there's real, real power. And the irony, just by the way, on that, we were short Plains All-American Pipelines. We were short pipeline companies, Tullow Oil. But we were also short Carnival, a cruise liner. And I sat there mesmerized. Why am I short a cruise liner as well as oil? Its biggest input is oil and energies. Why are we short? And that gave us essentially the reason later when the pandemic occurred. So we had technical footprints for why two things that were mutually exclusive that should have gone in opposite directions both failed. So it's very, very powerful charting if done properly. And as I say, so one thing about inflation I want to cover that's really key. Most people misunderstand inflation. The minute you create money, that is inflationary. In other words, if I have $100 in my wallet and you have $100 Canadian dollars and we represent all the Canadian dollars in circulation, and then the central bank issues another $200, the buying power of our money officially at that point has been diluted by 50% each. That doesn't mean if we rush quickly down that the shopkeeper will have doubled the price of his milk yet, because it hasn't filtered through. So it takes a while in the system to be filtering through. And in fact, the people that had access to the newly created money that was in Q1, QE2, QE3, QE Infinity, Twist, everything else, and not QE, all the other versions of printing money have actually gone into the banking sector to plug holes, losses, and then very cheap loan debt to organizations that have then bought their own stock back, et cetera, et cetera. So the inflation shows in assets first, which is why if I just jump to the S&P 500 over here, many of you will know exactly what that chart looks like over the last two decades. It is super, super strong. And that's not even the NASDAQ. It's just been going up, up, and up from 2009. After every crisis, you just wanted to buy the dip, literally, because the liquidity was coming. And it doesn't matter which central bank head followed Greenspan, the liquidity was coming. This was the NASDAQ, and I've log scaled this. It just goes up, up, and up. All of you, you can visualize these charts if you've not got line of sight, but all of these were just non-stop bull markets that are in assets. I've put up Apple over here. Let's just take some of my annotations off and just catch a Google of that. 2009, after splits, you could have had Apple at $3.21, $122 today. And so it goes on. Moderna, the vaccine guys have done the same in half the time. I'm looking at the Chinese index over here, major upside setup. So actually, we're going to see globally, to a degree, what's already been happening in America. Money is needing to find a home. Money is needing to find a home in assets. And the people who have the money are the people that invest in assets. They're not buying extra liters of milk and bread. So they're not that's why you're not seeing it as yet, although you will be seeing it to a degree, because it's being masked through shrinkflation and other techniques they use. So we'll cover that separately. But overall, you're not seeing double-digit inflation easily unless you're watching very closely. So we've had asset price inflation. Now we've transitioned from that. This was a very interesting transition that's come with the bond collapse, Tom, is we're now seeing other markets that are more fundamental and basic and everyday, like agris. Now, remember something.
Exactly as you're saying, it's starting to come into real world goods, right?
Absolutely. And we've had specialization, incredible technology that have been highly deflationary. I mean, 65,000 hectares used to be a big farm. Nowadays, people are 125 plus, and they're running it on four people, combine harvester tech, all of this scaling, the density that they're getting, they've just got so much better and so efficient in farming. And yet the margins are still really quite low for farmers. They get invariably hard done by the food supply chain of all the corporatocracy. But let's set that point apart for now. The fact of the matter now is in an environment that has actually been quite deflationary through technology over the last 40 years, where we've got better and better at getting bigger yields out of more, you're now seeing Robusta coffee up, breaking up. That's the cheap bean. That's the stiff mule spike bean, not Arabica, that gives it a bit of sting. It's going up even more than the more expensive Arabica bean. You're seeing pork bellies. Just a couple of charts to flash by you here. I mean, you're eating your side of bacon. It was 73. It's now 105. That's since December of 2 to 3 months. You know, I mean, come on. We're looking here at wheat futures. It's up. Last year in July, you were buying for 471. Now it's 637. I'm flashing around through a bunch of commodities. Soybean oil futures. Let me just show you this one on a bigger time frame. This is a massive falling wedge. So the key point I'm making here for those that aren't seeing the charts and all these different examples I'm giving you is we're seeing agris, livestock, everything going up. Now you have to ask yourself, Have these guys lost their technological edge? Are they regressing? Or is the dollar the thing that's slipping and they need a higher tag item? Look at that breakout out of the falling wedge on beans. You know, you had a low here in March, roughly COVID era, 24.72. 1 year later, 57.41. You're talking about more than double, 2.5 times on something that people have been growing for ages. Lumber, a big one for you guys in North America and homes. You could have had 1st of April, 251, 937. You know, that's almost 4X. That's 4X in a year.
When I was going to say that time frame of all of these commodities that you're going through, you know, doubling, tripling, quadrupling is all very, very short, right?
A lot of it's in the last year, which is why I say the COVID key point. People don't realize, everybody knows this is a defining event that has occurred. What they've not fully grasped in terms of pricing in structure, that it is a turning point for how people view certain markets. A 40-year bull in debt is over, according to me. It died in March last year. We were the only ones calling it. There were other people saying you should still buy the euro dollar. Every time there's fear, people are going to buy the bonds, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, the bubble's debt. Why do you want to buy a bubble? Mm-hmm. That is the real bubble. This is uranium and energies. You saw what happened in Texas. We keep a very up to date with the guys there. There were cutoffs there. Unfortunately, recyclables aren't filling the gap just yet. You know, I love the notion of not doing damage to the planet. Fine. Don't use it as an excuse to tax us all into the ground, like I think you will. But anyway, that moot point aside, uranium going up, clean energy. This is big for Europe, a little bit less so maybe for you guys. You have Westinghouse over there, but they do a lot of work in the rest of the globe. You know, Germany backed out of nuclear energy a lot after Fukushima. They're all going back in now. So this is starting to break out, also coinciding with the absolute low in March and then starting to break out through this. So you saw this of your own accord and just commented, and you've literally called it yourself. All these items bottomed on the fear, the final capitulation fear that was brought by one of the most outlandish economic events, where we essentially destroyed the bulk of our SMEs, kept everybody at home, and pulled the handbrake up on the global economy virtually. And that's hyperdeflationary. And that dipped prices for everything. And what are we seeing now? A very big snapback. You look at natural gas, major falling wedge. We stood on the stage in 19 in Acapulco after calling through most of 18 for the single dollar oil. It then happened within literally a month in March, because it was February, and we're lucky we got home. We could have been stuck in Mexico, which might not have been a bad idea. And now our story is you're going to see three digits again for oil. This is gas. Very similar. Very, very similar. If I bring up WTI, which is your Western Texas, because you've got a lot of U.S. audience and Canadian audience, I'm sure. If I pull that one up, U.S. oil, and add him in there, you'll see that you had that huge dip again in March, and now we're breaking out. That was ridiculous. You had storage issues. You essentially went to zero in the end, but you tested the edge of this wedge. We typically, we teach about wedges. We're very familiar with them. You typically get three impulses, and you've done the third, then you break out to the upside. Let me just draw this with a nice fat pen. There's your super spiky first that ran into the top of 2008-9. You need to view oil almost as the Rockefeller tax. When economies are going great, they're buying a lot of products, a lot of delivery is taking place, a lot of plastics, everything it takes oil. People are buying goods and items. They have to restock supermarkets with not fridges, TVs, not just foods. People do eat more even in good times, it's been shown. So foods aren't that defensive. People eat less in bad times, but generally oil is a tax on all activity. We had such a boom in the property era, and that was your apex high. We then had the sell-off here. We called that in 14, and we called that there. So actually, we've been the big bear on oil, but now we are calling for the three digits again. And this falling wedge structure that I'm showing you here, we just had a pullback now, and it's going to probably come and sit back in before it sets off for the upside. And then we're going, that's the line I would look at back above 100 and potentially onto new highs. This is hyperinflation in play. And the inflation is coming through the debasement of the currency. Now, people will say, and you raised this question before we started, Tom, people will say, but is the dollar going to fail? Not against other fiats because they're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
not
that's,
against other fiats.
We were talking about that, the global synchronization or the globally synchronized debasement of these currencies. So how do you see that, Francis? Is the US dollar going to appreciate greatly, comparatively to the other currencies? And then what happens?
Yes. Thank you for setting up that question. So, and you, that's our primary phrase. This is a synchronized global debasement. So what they've done, and this is why I'm quite conspiratorial of nature, the central banks of the world have helped mask the proliferation of dollars by pursuing similar policies. If we all lepers in the leper colony, nobody knows they're a leper. We just think that's how you look. You have a whole bunch of scabs and every now and then a finger falls off. We just think that's what it means to be human. And that's how it's been disguised. We're all lepers in the leper colony. So in a relative sense, people are too currency focused. They're not focused on real money. And then we talk about gold and silver, and we talk about how they are almost the two greyhounds that have been held back on the leash, because the next charts I'll be showing you will be rhodium, palladium, and showing you what's gone on there. Now, this is the platinum group of metals. Even platinum has now broken out of its falling wedge. So what we're actually seeing is global currency is the dollar, and all products measured in it all happen to be going up. Now, you can either decide it's got a whole bunch harder to mine, grow beans, do all these various activities, or the basis by which you're measuring is going down. And you're not seeing it because the euro, USD, the euro sometimes up, sometimes down, the pound sometimes up, because they're proliferating too. The Japanese yen, actually the dollar's been going up against the yen right now because they've been proliferating for decades and they've been also doing further it. So what happens is we're all currencies are like national people that have jumped out of the airplane and are free falling. And I don't know if you remember the James Bond movie with the archetypal villain Jaws. You know, Roger Moore was falling and, you know, he's the British pound. And then let's say the bad guy was Russian, because they always seem to be. He just tipped himself vertical and caught up a little bit and was grabbing him by the ankle. In fact, you have the French jumper, you have the American jumper. Well, French would be the Euro, the European jumper. You would have the British jumper, you would have the Japanese jumper. And you're all looking at each other and saying, I'm doing relatively better to them. But you're all free falling to the ground. And the plane keeps looking like it's going up, up, up and further away. But it's flying at a straight line altitude. Mm-hmm. And the plane's called gold. And that's it. But it gets further and further and further and further away as you're plummeting to Earth. But you're too busy looking at how you're doing relative to the other lepers in the leper colony. And this is how people are being fooled by sleight of hand. Inflation is taxation. Inflation is taxation. It is dilution of your monetary power. Mm-hmm. And it is going out of control. And now you're going to start feeling it in your CPI. Talking about CPI, great guy, John Williams, also from your side of the pond. Definitely folks should follow him. He measures inflation according to the 1982s. I think it is 81, 82 Reagan era. Because what people do when they want to cheat is they avoid all basis of consistent comparison. If I keep changing the basket and dropping an iPhone in and saying, well, it's five times faster, even though it costs twice as more, actually it's deflationary because it does this, this, and this, while the one from last year only does that. And you use all sorts of sleight of hands of technology. Shrinkflation is an entire Reddit theme on US products, which guys can go, look, go to Reddit, go do a Google of shrinkflation. You'll see your chemicals. The container looks almost identical. They get it the same shape, but they knock 50 mils off. When it's a 375, it comes out at a 325. This is happening on everything. Roll your toilet rolls out if you want. Less squares. You'll see all of these examples. So retailers seem to be in cahoots. And people wonder why I have a bit of a conspiratorial bend, because you have all these large CEOs of macro, fast-moving consumer good companies going to the same Bilderberg meeting as central bankers, going to the same Bilderberg meeting as the Bank of International Settlements and the bullion bank heads, going to the same international meeting. You get my theme. It seems like a lot of things are being done to keep us in the dark as much as possible. And if you're a pursuer of truth, then you need to understand where the true value is. And then people say, but gold's done so badly and silver's done so badly. Well, they haven't. They had a great year last year, and they're now in a bit of a progress decay period, which means they've been coming off. So let's have a little look at one or two of the gold and silver charts and discuss so that
Francis,
a little bit.
Just before we get there, you know, you talk about the possibility for getting to quadruple digit silver. So at that point, doesn't it seem kind of redundant to be measuring gold and silver in or relative to, let's say, the US dollar?
I think you're quite right. I think that the time that you would measure it for at that value will be probably very much as we're about to be transitioned into a quantum financial system or into a central bank digital token. But you'll, in effect, when you calculate your conversion and you repledge your physical silver for your whatever the new currency order of the day is, mm-hmm. and you take the mark that dollar last traded at before it ceased to exist, assuming that it's terminated entirely or becomes a Fed coin of some variety, you will in effect see that in fact, you would have a quadruple value. I'm not trying to be the guy that throws out the biggest number. I don't like those contests. Mm-hmm. I also keep an eye on the crypto markets and everything. And I'm not one of going, a million. If it doesn't have a technical merit, then I don't do it. What I will say is if you look at debtclock.org, in fact, they have 4,900 as the, if you take the 1913. Now, that doesn't mean you get specifically to that date and period when that will ever be cross-referenced. But if I just show you here, right now, dollar to silver ratio right now, 4,943. It was 266 per ounce ratio in 1913. If you take the amount the dollars effectively devalued, compounded for all those years from 1913 to where we stand today at 2021, that's a lot of compounding over a lot of years. You've got $5,000. So I'm almost being modest by saying four digits. On your gold, you've got 35,000 per ounce. Now, they're going to try and get us off the physical. They want to, if there's a surveillance state, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole too far. They're going to not want to have you become too physically orientated. They're going to transition us to something which is highly tracked, which will either be through the blockchain or some quantum financial system, as I say. But there will be a period where you'll check and you will be able to bridge, I expect, everything you've stacked, if you want. I wouldn't do it all personally, into whatever new system is reestablished. But there's no doubt that this is a synchronized global reset for me. And, you know, many countries that aren't on the dollar. So you also asked about the dollar milkshake and the dollar currency. I didn't fully answer all aspects of that. There will be a key moment where the currencies will fail and they'll fail from the periphery. This is why I've got the gold versus the Turkish lira chart here for you. I've not log scaled it, by the way. At one point, you know, it was 64.77 lira for an ounce of gold. It's now 13,538. That point wasn't that long ago. It was 1998. So you've gone from 64 to 13,500. So to someone in Turkey who's fiat, and remember, the lira is just a smaller version of the same issues as the dollar. And the dollar's benefited by getting people that escape the lira into the dollar. So it buys more time. So you have to think of this medieval village. The poorest people lived outside the walls. When the enemy Vikings came to attack, they were sacrificed. Then ever you had walls within walls. The king was in the middle and the most fortified place. You had to bash a few doors down to get to him and the monks and all the people who had the power in those areas. And then you had, you know, concentric walls. What's going to happen is the periphery fails. and then they get ever tighter. And the more the periphery fails, the more you actually, for a temporary period, push up that in the middle, because people that want to escape lira will also buy dollars. They aren't all buying gold and Bitcoin. They might buy a little bit of gold and silver, and some of them may even engage in crypto markets. But that for practical purposes, they're going to need something that's recognized, easily accepted. And so you will actually get the dollar strengthening. And that's the final shoe to drop when you have gold and silver shooting up on a strong dollar and you have global currency collapse. I don't know how many of the guys noticed that the Turkish lira had one of the biggest gaps I've ever seen in a currency on Monday. And Erdogan fired another central banker for, I don't know, the third or fourth time. And he's told jewelers that their gold vaults must be pledged with the government. So he's utilizing the old millennia standard of fortifying and trying to instill confidence in a fiat-based currency. And this affects jewelers who are sitting on inventory of gold. So if that doesn't tell us something, you know, I don't know what does. Let's just show you a couple of the metals around that, by the way, just to show you how palladium's done over the same time. I've got quite a few annotations on here. We actually have a target for palladium to go higher. Palladium used in the hybrid cars a lot, more than platinum in the catalytic converters. People are moving away from diesel. It's great pity because they're pretty solid vehicles. 3,800. By the way, you could have bought in 09, which was all the misery, the world's going to end. $167 got you an ounce of palladium, part of the platinum family. Now, 2,629. It's got much of the same properties of platinum, but because of the demand and the auto industry, it's been particularly sought after. Only really supplied by South Africa and Russia, not necessarily the fulcrums of stable government in the world. I say that as a South African born citizen, so I'm entitled to be a bit disparaging. And I mean, they've literally had power shutdowns where they've had to switch off the mines from operating, and quite a lot of worker unrest and various other things. So Russia had a platinum shutdown. So quite a lot going on here. I've done platinum as well, which has lagged immensely. Platinum used to be the most valuable metal. And because of the loss of industrial demand through palladium eating its dinner, really, essentially, it lost a lot of demand. Now it's kicked out of this falling wedge as well. It dipped as low at the COVID date, 566 ounces. So 1 year ago, in the big smashdown of the pandemic, you had $566 an ounce. You're trading $1,174 today. So that's already a 2x up, and it's coming out of a falling wedge. It'll take these all-time highs of $2,300 in time as part of this hyperinflationary thing. So we're seeing the family of platinum metals all going up. Platinum, going up. Palladium, absolutely super strong. Then there's the real monster that's super rare. That's also found by most of the platinum miners. Very, very rare. Rhodium. I've got this chart up. You could have had it in the 1st of July, 2016, $61 an ounce. 2,530 mm-hmm. today an ounce. It's now costing more than gold, rhodium. You could have had it for 61 ounces. I mean, that is unbelievable. And I think at its very lowest points, you're close to a 50x mm-hmm. in these rare metals that are being used. So you've got rhodium extremely up. There's also copper. We can pull that chart up super quick because it's a fascinating one, and it's an industrial one too. High-grade copper futures. Watch what's gone on here in copper. So if we're talking metals of the industrial nature, everything says the dollar isn't worth what it used to be because they're all going up, and there aren't all problems with demand. Look what's happened in just this year. I'll take some of those annotations up. Since the pandemic, you could have got it at 1.9. It's now 4.08, more than double. So that's in a year, more than a double. How's inflation rates, if you even believe the CPI inflation rates, how are these things going to be contained when some of the most conductive metals like silver, the most, and copper affordable and highly, are at such levels. And we're on all-time low measures of construction and development after COVID. Mm-hmm. Imagine you get some moderate recovery, some slight emblems. I don't buy the recovery narrative at all. But this is the prices in the most depressed global economy in the world. You've killed demand. You've flattened the middle. You've broken it by what you've done. You've locked everybody down. Nobody's doing anything. No one's making income. There's no discretionary spending on the same level as it was. And this is what's happened. Prices have doubled. And now you're sending stimulus checks to the end user who can barely pay his credit card. He pays 16.9 up to 30% on his debt, not what the bankers lending to the megacorp at 0.1% to buy their own stocks back and see their options vest for buying their stocks. I mean, Coca-Cola has gone down, up in debt, less earnings, less sales, down in revenue, less earnings, and it's worth 2.5 times more because they've been buying it up with cheap debt. But you don't borrow like that. This is the fraud that is the system, a two-tier structured system. And unfortunately, you know, the game is up. And the same people want to bring about the new system. That's our problem, unfortunately. We're going to carry some of that disease over. But they're going to have to take it down. And this is why these reset narratives are coming out of the World Economic Forum. That's why we're getting into these discussions. Let's have a look at some of the charts with gold on its own.
So, Francis, as you mentioned, you know, platinum, palladium, rhodium, copper, do you think that these are the canaries in the coal mines that have, you know, basically been allowed to appreciate simply because gold and silver have too many eyes on them that would, let's say, undermine the value or the confidence in these currencies?
I think they're able to control gold because the degree of industrial use, jewelry, basically, is relatively small. Mm-hmm. And there's a large amount of bullion, and they can do what they need with stocks. Silver is a problem for them because of industrial use, and they've essentially kept a fake discount window open. That's my personal view. Mm-hmm. Everyone can use that discount window, but the point is most people aren't being encouraged to do it because it's not government mandate. You'll have all your celebrities telling you to take a vaccine, and they've just had theirs. You won't hear them telling you to buy silver because it's common sense and it's good financial sense. And they don't. The last thing they need is a lot of people withdrawing that. There is over here on this side, and I've heard on stateside as well from the material I'm watching, you know, there's delays now in getting supplies on certain things, and there's reduced access to that. So we've just got to keep stacking, and the eventual will happen. I mean, you can build a wall on the beach, but you don't hold back the tide. It's just one of those things. And that's why I call it the great game of patience, where your trade is wrong, 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 and then suddenly brutally right. Mm-hmm. Because when it adjusts, it is literally releasing the greyhounds from the leash. And that will unfortunately coincide, I expect, with lots of other social drama and many other aspects that we're not here to get into. I have a Reset Sniper channel and people can, you know, shoot the breeze about that there. But I expect a turmoil generally, and it will be hidden. It will be masked on the back page that silver is making all-time highs, gone up X percent, gold is doing this and various other aspects. And one of the charts we absolutely need to ensure we have a little visit on is the gold-silver ratio.
Which that's actually what I was going to ask about next is you know, you really see that could go much, much, much lower. So how do you go about analyzing that, Francis, and where do you see it could get to?
Yes, let's bring it up and discuss it. So we at 113 after a blow-off move to gold and the blow-off move on the gold-silver ratio, which coincided with the COVID, which is why I keep saying this pandemic was the seminal bookmarking event. Mm-hmm. And I really, if guys get anything from me today, understand that was cycle change. That was a whole bunch of things changed tangents. And I think that's kind of how it was intended, but that's maybe me. Maybe I'm a fruitcake. People can make their own minds up. But the point doesn't matter. the charts are illustrating that. So I'm just going to take the eye off and show you the annotations we've got for you, because we've got quite a bit of history here of gold. I mean, I'm a chartist and I love looking at it, because to me, it's real data. It's not fakery. Somebody had to trade real money here. And this represents the closest thing we've got to some truths. And I'm a truth seeker at heart. So this is from 76, your gold silver ratio. And this was a very interesting point that's going to come out of this discussion, Tom, is that the last precious metals bull market was a completely truncated bull market, in my view. Mm-hmm. In other words, you had the 80s bull market and you got a half-cast bull market that occurred in 2011. And the brakes were pulled up on that.
You're speaking particularly about the bull market from 08 to 11, and you're saying that it was truncated and basically stopped in its tracks, right?
Correct. And it's kind of proven when you look at the charts. I've got my stylus pen, and I'll just show you if your guys, for those watching and for those listening, I'll talk you through it as well. Essentially, you can see this green box over here was your 08-11 period. You can see that there. And in that, you got a 30.5 low and an 88.2 high. What am I talking about? The gold-silver ratio. So at its lowest point, which was the peak for gold and silver, so just again, so that we don't lose, guys, when the gold and silver ratio is deep down low, that's when we're spiking up strong on gold and silver. It's just that silver relatively outperforms and has a higher beta. So at that point, 30.5 ounces of silver bought you 1 ounce of gold. Before we had the collapse, you hit a high of 88.2 in that blue box area, which is around that green area. That was why I say it was a half job. The 80s market, so if I just clear that off, the 80s market, which was a full bull market in my view, you traded as low as in 1980. So remember, this correlates with Falker and the bonds. This is why people aren't tying gold and silver analysis with debt analysis. Gold and silver is the anti-debt, because debt is money, fiat money. You've got to understand, I call these the anti-fiat. Gold and silver is an anti-fiat. And you've got to look at the debt markets, because the debt markets is the fiat creation mechanism. And that's another key point. If you take anything, and this is something that I feel I bring unique to when I discuss gold and silver markets with people, a lot of amazing guys. I love them all, by the way. So I've got nobody to knock. They are, you know, they talk about practical supply issues when they're trying to buy, and also very useful. But when you do this kind of analysis, this was a pivotal event. That's Falker in the dark blue box here, 16.5. That's 16.5 ounces of silver bought you 1 ounce of gold. That was in 1980. By the time we'd had our full collapse, which means the market had gone down from the all-time high, you hit a high of 102. You needed 102.1 ounces of silver to buy a single ounce of gold. So silver was murdered, down in single digits dollars during that period. And that was around about 90, between 91 and 92. And that's when you started to have the dot-com boom, et cetera, and people started to get a little bit more dis-ease with the free money. This is Max Greenspan. His irrational exuberant speech was 96 over here. And you had that set up, and you collapsed from around about the 70s right down to the 40s, and then you had our half run, which took us to what we'd just recently done. We've only really just surpassed that. And for those that aren't aware of technicals, you get that first bull and you get a pullback. It's that next leg up that is the superseding mega run up that occurs that you don't want to miss. And I'm here to say, patience, fellow, your moment is coming. The debt markets are unraveling. And you've got to understand the relationship with fiat creation and the value of precious metals, and how the debt markets is the canary in the mine for the fiat creation when it's finally gone too far. So overall,
Francis, just to go back to something you said just now, that first leg you believe has played out, and now we're getting ready to be able to, let's say, take advantage of that second, more powerful leg?
Correct. And if you continue with the observation that's going on with this chart, you'll see that we've made an all-time high on the gold-silver ratio. So I've taken the gold contract, just so that people understand what I've done charting-wise here. I've taken the actual gold contract. I've not taken anybody else's data. This is continuous futures gold divided by continuous futures silver. So that always will tell you it's going to divide the gold price by the silver price. How many ounces do you need of one for the other? Now, we super spiked, again, that bookend event on the gold-silver ratio to 126 in this orange box, and it all was March last year. And we got, and this was a rising wedge. Again, this is a squeezing structure where you eventually get the blow off out the top and then you capitulate down. A rising wedge is actually a bearish structure, but sometimes you get a final melt up. And of course, we got this extra normal event that occurred, and silver fell really hard. Gold fell a bit, but not nearly as proportionally much. We had a blow off top where you actually needed 126.6 ounces. Now, you talk to First Majestic CEO, and he tells you he's pulling out 8 ounces of silver tops for every gold ounce he's pulling out in terms of what he's able to find. There's very few dedicated silver miners out and out. It's a byproduct for people pulling out gold and copper as much. So there's very few pure plays. There's not none, but there's very few. And the rarity of silver is being undervalued immensely. So at 113, when we were coming back down, we called major bull on we saw the reversal of what was a blow off top, and we were all fully in those Hunt volatility funnel trades, trading long. And that makes me my happiest, because I'm stacking long, but instead of trading against my investment position, I'm now trading with it. Mm-hmm. We had an amazing run, but we took off at target, and you can see why. Because actually, it wears you down. It has come off. It's traded sub 1700, I think, possibly, since the 2040 high. But look at this. The further you blow off to the upside, another key technical point that people should learn, as extreme as you swing in your insanity to one direction, so emotionally, you will get an excessive swing to the downside. Now, I have 16.5 at the last bull market and 102. You have 126.6 excess move in an absolute deflationary, switch the entire world economy off moment. I mean, it's absolutely crackerjack. It's mental, but let's set that aside. It is probably the most extreme economic stop switch that's ever been pulled globally and synchronized, as I've now started to mention. And this is the big problem. We've got too much synchronization, not independent opinion anymore. And the blow off to the downside, my personal opinion is you'll get 9.9 or lower. In other words, you're going to get single digit again. And then you listen to First Majestic CEO. Sorry, I can't pronounce his surname, and I've not got it in front of me. I think it's
Keith Neumeyer.
Keith Neumeyer, thank you. I don't want to do him a disservice. Sounds of cracker gent. Telling you only get 8 ounces for every ounce of gold. And it ties totally with our single digit gold silver ratio. Now, if we were single digit gold silver ratio now, as of gold's price right now, you would be at 175 odd. I'll check the exact price for detail, but you'd be at 175 if we were 1:10 for silver. Now, in the event of we getting down there, gold has gone up from 1,050 to it hit 2,000 during this period. So gold's not going to be standing still itself. Gold gets to 3,000, 4,000, maybe 5,000 in this complete reset, because this is going to be exceptional. I'm expecting supply lines going down. We focused on, you know, preparing people for wealth, but also other preparation for this reset that's going to happen. I'm afraid the bigger the problem, the bigger the solution. They've got a big solution they want to bring down on us. So they need a big reaction, a big solution. I won't go further down there, but I'd say to people, think the unthinkable in terms of your preparation and don't let it only be financial. But that aside, sticking to the gold and silver aspect, we've got a long way to go on gold. And if silver is going to be 1/10 or less, which is our forecast, and Steve has given you 1:8 on the mining coming out, that's a very big silver number. Mm-hmm. How does that gold and silver chart leave you feeling, Tom? I mean, when you look at that and you see that.
It's, it's something that I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of our fans of this show have waited for a long time. But as you say, that period is going to be very surrounded by a lot of other factors that are going to make, you know, $5,000, $10,000 an ounce gold, that world not be a very palatable place to be. But Francis, how do you think about creating defenses, as you call them, to protect yourself from the risks of confiscation and or taxation on your gold and silver when it starts to appreciate and get to these numbers?
So let me do something that's very gestalt. In other words, just a few thoughts off the top of my head that is entirely non-advisory, and that's one man to another man and my kind of people as audience. It's my personal opinion that you should always carry yourself forward with integrity, and it will serve you very well in business and in life. It might take a while for you to make your money, but your reputation lasts long. Mm-hmm. Overlaid upon that is we live in a system of fraud and deception. That's my personal opinion. And you don't want to be the only honest hand in a poker game of cheats. If you have to do something for the greater good to protect your family, please put your family before your government and their fiscal prudence, their probity. Please understand where your priorities lie. If everything I said there makes sense to you, I would say you need to do certain things that should protect the fact that you might be a physical holder of metals against the possibility of forfeiture, being seized, confiscation, being paid in some chicken feed new currency of questionable merit, even theft from other people, especially if you're known to have certain views. So maybe having some paperwork for some future sale that you might make of it to some person lying around so that at the drop of a hat, you can always prove that, in fact, your metals has been sold on to Joe Schmo in the other part of the planet, maybe somewhere in the Maldives where there's no telephones or internet. Might be a smart idea. Maybe not talking about it too much with people. So, because there will certainly be bounties, there'll be ratting people out bounties, in my personal opinion. I don't want to go too reset sniper on you and get your YouTube in trouble, but I'm thinking there's going to be great pressure exerted on people to curry favor with the new totalitarian government. You've seen it on these COVID report on someone not wearing a mask, this sort of thing. So be careful, be confidential. And maybe have proof of sale ready to hand with a certain element. Also, maybe distribute where you retain it. And I would not use formal vaults and formally known safe houses. These are extreme times. I don't want to sound too blackpilled, but these are extreme measures. People that are this fraudulent and this deceptive and that are going to perpetuate a tax on you through this hyperinflation that I see coming are also going to bring new taxes as well on you. And it's all part of a leveling that will see an elite class and a peasantry class. You need to do all you can that if you have to be a slave, you're at least a damn rich one where you can buy yourself some options. Mm-hmm. So that means being thinking the unthinkable. It just makes perfect sense to me. I don't want to advise anybody to do anything unlawful. I'm just saying there may become the time where the law becomes an ass because the people writing it are not writing it with your interests at heart. Mm-hmm. And it may certainly contradict immensely with there's an American audience and a Canadian audience getting a lot of this where it's very, very much in conflict with constitutions that were written by people that try to protect the citizenry rather than treat them as marks for confiscation, flattening, and wealth stripping. So understand the nature of the game and then do all you can to defend yourself and pull no stops and recognize your loyalty to service, your wife, your children, and their quality of life extends beyond any common political fool's recently written bylaw that is has the intent and purpose of flattening the citizenry for the benefit of an elite few. That's my take. So do whatever's necessary. And I've given you one idea. I have a few others. People can get more of that kind of information if they choose by joining our community or having a chat. And you just go to our website, themarketsniper.com. I don't want to say too much more on that front. But look, I'd love to be proven 100% wrong on the possibilities of confiscation. The fact is it's happened before. That's just in a depression in America alone. Mm-hmm. We now have a globalized scale of synchronized totalitarian governments, all bringing this down on the entire population of the world, mm-hmm. plus a surveillance technology society. You think it couldn't do that again? I'm thinking it's more likely than not, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, Francis. Well, we've gone through a lot of great information today. Do you want to bring anything else up as we wrap up here?
Sure. I've mentioned First Majestic. I think he's a proper CEO. It's actually got an outside number of outlier level of shorts, not quite the level of GameStop. But I think that's a great one for a squeeze. This is what we call the HVF. We've actually got an outside target of 34. It has run that second interim. So our trading methodology sees interim targets where we then expect a little bit of a pullback afterwards. Mm-hmm. So this has gone up. It's broken. We've traded it from the nines level. It broke out. This is quite a big time frame. It's a month. So it's not an overnight sensation. This is a macro trade. We think not only will 34 fall, but it will go beyond that in overperformance immensely. Just think if you get to that double digit, if you get to that single digit gold silver ratio, what a stock like First Majestic would be worth, you know, with the silver in the ground that it has. And it's not the only one. There's other great players, you know, Endeavor, Wheaton, you guys know them. There's a lot on your side. If you're in the UK, Fresnillo has a lot of Mexican interest. There's all options through them. This is actually in one of our pattern structures and is utterly performing exactly as it should, despite coming back from hitting the 24s down to 16. After the Wall Street Bets thing. It's funny how these narratives of Wall Street Bets also perfectly dovetail with an interim target for us and pull back. This is what I love about really good technical analysis. It brings the fundamental events and the technical events together. I often, and this is the difference, I start with the technical. I don't know the reason, and I see what's going down according to the chart. That gives you the news before the news. And that's how you get to be short oil from $67 and it dips down to a single digit. That's how you got to be long and actually closed your gold and silver longs at the key moment and stood back. And I'm grateful because the pullback's actually gone on for quite a while. But macro level, this stock has got a great structure. It's set up and I have every confidence that the guys are going to get. I'm just sorry about the circumstances that will surround it. I mean, you know, you'd all love to become that millionaire and many times over, but you wouldn't want to do it in a state of new slavery. I'm sorry, I can't do anything about that, but at least make sure you build that wealth. And holding fiat is the worst thing you can do. Owning debt is one of the worst things you can do. Being in debt is another bad thing. For those that have properties and homes, this stretches outside of the gold and silver discussion. But even if you fix your rates, which you should certainly do, have a lawyer look at those T's and C's. These guys are famous for wriggle clauses. In the same way you pulled me up on not mentioning physical, the ETF settle in cash, you need to have a look at your terms on fixed. So the way they can flush you out of assets, out of homes, is spikes in interest rates, which goes with Brent Johnson, who we mentioned, the dollar milkshake theory. As the other currencies fail, you get gold, silver going up, but also on an increasing dollar. That is the final shoe to drop. We are in reset. Many people say, when's reset? Many of the shoes have already fallen. The dominoes are already in a row and falling. I want to leave you finally with a positive message. Take positive action on building your wealth. Find a community. Deal with all the other things non-financial that we haven't explored that are outside this remit. But certainly, stack your metals. Keep holding. It's the wrong trade until it suddenly will be the right trade. But government is not your friend. The new war is the state on the people. Don't think in a national context. It's going on in every level. A Chinaman isn't your enemy. A Russian citizen isn't your enemy. The governments of the world on us and the financial systems, prepare against that. And by taking action, you improve your mood. Many people feel anxiety with this COVID vaccine scenario. Take firm action. Make your decisions in advance. There will be such chaos that will go down, as you were referencing, Tom, that you need to have your wits about you, and that means you have the plan beforehand. In my case, I have my stop on my trade pre-planned. I have my entry and I have my target order in. In short, if I walked outside my house and was knocked down by a bus, my estate, the trade would be closed when the target is met. That's the difference of trading with leverage with a pre-plan. You need that for all aspects of your life going forward. We'd love to have anybody who's interested in being part of our community at themarketsniper.com. You can book a call and find out more about what we do. Thank you so much for what you do. Your YouTube channel is awesome. I love the links. I love the work you put in it. I'm going to be encouraging many more people on this side of the hemisphere to be checking in with the great guests you got on. And I hope this was an enjoyable session for your audience.
Well, we really appreciate your time and your community as well, Francis. Of course, you're available at The Market Sniper on Twitter and themarketsniper.com. Francis, thanks so much for this discussion and your charts today.
Absolute pleasure.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.